Okay, welcome here today on this topic, effective discipline grades 4 to 7. I don't know if I would have been bold enough to say that I enjoy discipline, but it is, let's just say, I see the value of it, and I've also seen the beautiful fruit of it. And so I'd like to just have this be a time today where we can encourage each other in this. Most of you have had a little opportunity to look through different ways of that teachers have used as a form of discipline. But for now, we're going to skip over that part and talk about what is discipline. The definition that I chose is...
Is that here taken? Okay, maybe you guys can scoot over. I got another one I want
to... Good, welcome. You're welcome to sit over here. There's even a soft seat if you want over here. A good definition for you to write is training that molds or perfects moral character. That's what we're after. Thank you, John.
Would you mind just taking these and passing them out?
Sure.
Raise your hand if you'd like it.
Hand out, please. Notice that I said training that molds or perfects moral character. I didn't say training that perfects behavior. And we're going to end up talking a little bit about what the difference is. Look at the why. Why do we discipline? Discipline addresses the heart and calls the child to submission to God's authority. You know, I think this is an important thing for us to get. Discipline addresses the heart and calls the child to submission to God's authority. And to help us understand this, I have young children, and they're getting older, and I find the temptation, my boys get to fighting over who gets to ride the ripstick. And you know what question is tempting to ask? Who had it first? Or the other thing that's tempting to do is, okay, Jason, you ride it for 10 minutes, and then it'll be Marcus' turn, and he rides it for 10 minutes. You've probably heard parents do that, or maybe you've tried it yourself. Or you let him have it, or play nice, or dad's going to spank. That's another way you could handle that situation. Or you could ignore it and say they're boys, they'll figure it out. But the thing that I want you to notice with all of those ways of dealing with that little problem, there's an issue that I haven't addressed. What is that? Remember, I'm practicing listening well. Exactly. What particular attitude is in focus here?
Selfishness.
I haven't really brought the boys to recognizing what their problem is. It's selfishness. And while some of these things that we just mentioned might have made so that at least temporarily they're not going to be fighting over this toy, we haven't addressed the problem itself. And that's something that's important to do for discipline. Discipline addresses the heart and calls the child to submission to God's authority. One of the things that you'll deal with, and I'm thinking now more probably toward the seventh grade part of the spectrum than the fourth grade part of the spectrum this morning. But I have a seventh grade girl, and she says I'm grumpy in the mornings. Teacher, that's how it is. Just accept it. Or even, well, I'm not a neat person. So consequently, my desk won't be neat, neither will my handwriting. That's a good time for you to say, really? Has this habit been a blessing or a curse to those around you and yourself? You know, the way you are in the mornings. Has that been a blessing to your mom and your sisters and brothers and those of us who get to see you first thing in the morning? It puts things in perspective, and that's what discipline needs to do. One more question here, the when of discipline. When do we discipline? When you've given an instruction that he has heard and understood and has not obeyed without challenge, without excuse, and without delay. I borrowed that one from a good book called Shepherding a Child's Heart. Some of the other things that you'll see today come from that book. It's written primarily for parents, but it's an excellent resource for school teachers. Shepherding a Child's Heart. And, you know, it's sometimes tempting for us as parents or teachers to think that when we've come to the point where they're doing what we told them to do, then we got what we wanted. But remember I said we're not just trying to control behavior, we're looking at character too. In fact, character primarily. So, when I have a student, and I've told him to, today it's your turn to go do this. He sighs, and he goes out of the classroom, and he closes the door extra hard. Then, I'm not quite finished yet. Oh, he's doing what I told him to do. But it wasn't with the right attitude. We'll talk about that a little bit more later, too. If you read the topic description today, there's one thing that I'd really like to emphasize there. I didn't write that description. But whoever did a good job of just putting in one little reminder for teachers. This isn't all about the student. Let me just see if I can find. Oh, here it is. Effective discipline starts with a disciplined teacher. That's us. And so our discipline might just be something as simple as, are you ready when the school students come in the mornings? Or are you still scrambling to pull together loose ends? That has something to do with being disciplined. Is your personal Bible reading and prayer consistent? Do you often find yourself saying, I wish I had more sleep last night? Or, I wish I wouldn't have spent so much time visiting with my co-teacher after school? Or perhaps you're one of those rare ones who says, I should have spent more time visiting with my co-teacher after school. But it all requires discipline. Are you one of those who interrupts class time to check that text that just ba-dinged on your phone. Chances are you might need a little more discipline. But we need discipline, self-discipline, or Christ discipline as teachers if we're going to have effective discipline with students. Look at tools to preserve order. And notice here we're talking about preserving order. We're not necessarily trying to bring back order. We're just trying to keep, or we're preserving order here. In the first blank, write procedures. Now, we've heard quite a bit of that already. Brother Jonathan mentioned the first days of school, talked a lot about management. I'd like to recommend this book, Handbook for Creative Teaching. I brought some extras along. I'd like for you to go home with a book like this if you don't have one or have access to one already. Excellent on procedures. If you read Handbook for Creative Teaching, you'll get good ideas for classroom management so that you are a good teacher. This one has it more from the perspective of we want to bring glory to God and produce students who bring glory to God. This book is an excellent one for procedures. Look in here under procedures. The other thing that we need as teachers is consistency. Soon after we had a number of children, we asked an elderly couple that we really respect, and we noticed their grown children, and we think, whoa, I want ours to be like that. And we asked them, what's the secret? Well, you need to be consistent. And I think that's one thing. As teachers, we need to be consistent. It might be tempting to let something slide, and then boom! Let's not deal with issues that way. One of the things that can keep order, if you don't know the students that you'll have this year, this is difficult to do. But one thing that I like to do is just prepare the seating arrangement and perhaps even the teams for recess time for the first part of the year. I've got children and I know how they're prone to form a little clique here, a little clique there. And we can help with that by just simply removing some of the temptation by spreading them out in the classroom. At the bottom of the page you see, believe in your, and I'm going to say, authority and responsibility. A couple things on that. I was teaching with one of my co-teachers, and the lower grade room was having some issues with some of the little boys. They just weren't obeying like they should have. And so I said, you know, sometimes it's not so much saying something different as just them seeing a different authority figure. I don't have to say a lot different than what that teacher did, but somehow just going to Mr. Miller makes an impression. Just send them over to me. Let's try that once. Well, before we did that, there was a school board meeting, and my co-teacher just mentioned to the board that, you know, we were having this issue, but we've got a plan now. And the chairman of the board said, nope. And then he said, you, pointed to the teacher for the younger grades, said, you need to establish your authority, and that means you're going to have to spank that little boy. Now, both of us, my co-teacher and I, turned a little bit red. I turned a little bit red because I was kind of ashamed that I didn't think of that. And she was thinking of what all that meant. But you know, we followed his directions, and the turnaround in that classroom was amazing. So I just say that, believe you have authority that's been delegated to you, and then along with that authority always comes responsibility, and it might be tough. Having said that, let me just tell you another. I had a friend who enjoyed telling this story. He said he had an upper grade classroom, and the students just continued to press the line and just go as far as they could. What do you do? And it became frustrating for him and for the students day after day. One weekend he went home, he's thinking about this, praying about this, got some counsel, figured out a plan. This is what's going to happen. I'm the teacher here. And he went back saying, we're not going to continue this way, saying that to himself. Didn't say anything to the students. But he was prepared. And you know what happened? Nothing. Somehow, the students sensed that there won't be that nonsense. It brought peace to the classroom. Purpose in your heart that this area of keeping order is a responsibility that belongs to you. One of the things that I think is good for us to understand as we talk about discipline is that you're at an interesting age here where you have students, and this A stands for authority and I stands for influence. I used this idea to help us yesterday in a class, but I think in today's class, you understand, let's see, a seventh grader would be about 13 years old, fourth grader would be about here. So what we're looking at today is someone in the ages of about right here to right here. If you're a lower grade teacher, but I'm talking about for a second grade teacher, you understand that when they have spare time, let's say, you put this paper on your desk and say, now do this. Once you get into the fourth to seventh grade part of the school term, you're talking about spare time that they have more control over. I usually give my students an option, and I might ask them, have you finished your spelling, or something like that. But in general, when they're finished with what I have assigned them, then they're more in charge of their spare time. Here's another example. Start your math now. Or here's your jobs for a day. When you're finished with one, go to the next one. Two fingers if you want to go to the bathroom. For my class, we say one person out of the classroom at a time. And, you know, and don't go unless it's very important. Even lining up. In a seventh grade classroom, you probably don't have to line up to go to break. It's okay if you do. But you understand, when I say authority, I'm just simply talking about, I'm the teacher, I tell you what to do. And this isn't saying that somehow once they get to fourth to seventh grade, you can't tell them what to do anymore. That's not at all what I'm saying. But I am saying that you're going to work more at your influencing them rather than just telling them. Here's an example that happens at our house. For the younger ones, it's not at all unusual for us to say, take out the garbage. But then, for my teenagers, our approach is much more one, okay, here are the jobs that we need to do today. What else should we do? Okay, who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? And that we work together more. So, what happens too many times, you see, we're in a bit of an awkward position here. We're just beyond this where now instead of you telling them everything they need to do, you're trying to influence them. You're trying to help them to make heart choices to do what is right. It's tempting well, let me give you an example. I had an older student who did something he shouldn't have done, and I asked him a question. And you know what his response was? He went like this. Now that gets my blood pressure up. Now, if you're just going to go by authority, you could respond something like, hold on, don't you ever do that when I ask you a question. You come back here, you stand right here, and you answer my question. Now, I hope you don't do it quite like that. But that's more an example of the just using your authority to get your seventh grader to do what's right. Okay, now the other option might look a little bit more like waiting a little bit till my blood pressure goes down. And then going over and not in front of the whole class, but saying, you know, I asked you that question because I want to help you work through that problem that we have. What do you think started that issue? And hopefully, if I'm patient, and if I'm comfortable with some silence for a while, we can get somewhere. I don't know about you, but that, and we'll talk about this tomorrow in the listening well, but that whole silence thing is a hard thing for me. If you don't answer the question that I ask, I'll just keep talking. If my student looks like they're going to just hold out on me, I'll just keep talking. Or I'll add more words to this issue. But Jesus was an excellent example here. You remember when Jesus was just riding on the ground? I think the silence got pretty long. But the point was sinking in during that silent time. When the students get to this age, notice that second little chart there, the enforce and reason thing could also apply. I want to explain more. I want to appeal. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I want to appeal to their conscience to help them make the right choice here. One of the things that I appreciated, though, I wish I had my notes with me, but this morning we heard, when your seventh grader says, well, I'm sorry, teacher, I still don't understand why you want me to do that, so I guess I won't do it, then your job's not finished yet. You know, you have a responsibility to help those students to learn. They must obey authority. So I just encourage you to remember that. By fourth grade, you're kind of beyond the giving stars for good behavior or spanking for bad behavior. What will you do? I have just a few ideas, but then I'd like for you to be prepared to share a few more. One of the things that I think is a good practical thing to do is have students undo the damage. Now, I'm talking more about physical damage. You wrote in a book, you go back through and carefully erase it. You made shoe marks in the hallway, you go carefully clean the shoe marks on the hallway. You broke that thing on the playground, you and your dad fix that thing on the playground. That's the kind of thing. That's just one thing that helps us take responsibility. Practice doing it correctly. My students do pretty well at going out for break in an orderly fashion. But occasionally, we revert back to the stampede thing. And usually to haul around and have them come back in isn't as effective. Just wait till the next break time. And say, you know, I noticed that we've been forgetting or somehow we digress back to the old way. Let's practice doing it right. And then I'll let you get out of the classroom and then I'd like for you to come back in again. And so you stand up and you go out properly. And you come back in. Okay, that was pretty good. Let's try it one more time. Just to be sure that we get it right, know how to do this right, and go out and have your break time. You didn't make a huge issue about it, but they really aren't interested in slowly going in and out of the classroom when they could be playing soccer. And it makes an impression. Remove from the center of attention. We're going to talk about some of the things that makes these older students tick. And one of the things that one of the things that's important to them is how their peers look at them. I've got teenage girls and I'm relearning that. But it's very important how their peers look at them. And if you're a seventh grade boy and you've got them laughing, the teacher has to be really skillful in order to make you not want to keep doing what you're doing. If you're a seventh grade boy and the other boys are laughing at you. I mean, not at you, but with you, you know. You kind of got it. So when I say remove them from the center of attention, my seventh grade teacher, we had a track that we used to run around that was visible from our classroom. And there were two of my classmates who were just experts at getting the rest of us distracted from what we should be doing. I realize now more than I did then that there was that I wasn't innocent. But both of these were young men who, number one, could have used a physical exercise. Number two, had the energy that just needed an escape. And so it wasn't unusual at all for the teacher to go over, have a quiet little talk with them, and they get up and they go out of the classroom, and next thing you knew, out there, they go round and round. And soon they'd be back in. By then, the rest of us were back to work, and they were tired enough that they could work, and the fun was all gone. They lost their momentum. That's an example of removing from the center of attention. Make a specific apology is the next thing that I was thinking of. I'm not a real fan of promoting saying sorry when that truly isn't the case. In my children, I can generally hear by how it's said how much sincerity there is behind it. But if you've talked to them and they know they've done wrong, it's right for them to make it right. And so if you snooped in his desk, then you go tell him, "I'm sorry that I didn't mind my own business." If you said something rude about him, say, "I'm sorry," especially if he heard what you said. But I don't think there's anything wrong with them making that apology in front of you as a teacher, just so there are no PS's added that shouldn't be there. Last one I have written there, we've talked about briefly already. Appeal to their conscience. There in Romans it talks about the conscience. Those verses, that idea comes up again. Has this habit been a blessing or a curse to those around you? One of the things that appealing to their conscience does, it helps us to see this isn't a contest between the student and the teacher. You know, you are bad, I don't like bad, I'm going to make you do this. When we appeal to their conscience, we're trying to help them understand this is something between you and God. And again, that's why who had it first doesn't really solve that problem. It won't lead them to the cross. Okay, what things have you tried that will help older students when they've done something they shouldn't have done? Okay, how about one from this section?
One thing that I've done is that I've really enjoyed or benefited from is having the students discipline themselves, like be responsible for their own. Like that's like for breaking small procedures and that kind of thing. They make a mark on the board and then they take care of it themselves. I tell them I don't want to have to tell them to do it. They take care of themselves, they're late or something like that, and they stay in for it and that kind of stuff. And sometimes it's a little easier to do that for them than if I have to tell them to do it. It's nice for me, half the time I have no idea why the marks are on the board.
Okay.
They're there and they take care of it.
Okay, yeah.
Makes my job a little easier.
So essentially that is kind of helping to make it a conscience issue.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Yeah. You know, that just reminds me of something else that I was going to point out today. I was at a teacher's meeting similar to this, and there was one of those older brothers who had lots of experience. And he was telling about the fantastic results he gained when he said, "Students, we've been having this, or you've been having this problem, and you know it's a problem. What do you think the punishment should be? And how should we implement that?" And so they had a discussion, and they all decided together, and they lived happily ever after. And then one of my first or second year co-teachers was thinking, "Wow, maybe that could work with my first and second graders." I agree. You know what? She just shut. essentially, that can be a pretty lazy thing, especially if you try it with the younger grades. They still need you to be telling them. I think even with our 4th to 7th grade level, I'd be real slow to try something like that. Maybe some of you have tried it on certain things and got good results. I'm open to that. But let's not sit down on the first day of school and say, children, let's decide what our rules are going to be and what we're going to do about them. 4th to 7th graders, in my opinion, aren't quite ready for that. Anything else?
I would say I did a little bit of that with a particular case with one student, but before I approached it, I had a set plan. This is what we're going to do. But then I did present it that way. What do you think we should do about this? And it was very positive in that he came up with the exact plan that I did. Pretty far.
Okay.
And if you wouldn't have, I would have modified his plan a little bit to where we'd have been where I was planning to be.
Mm-hmm.
I work with cows a lot. And it's a lot easier to get a cow to do what you want if you make her think that it's her idea first.
That's true. I will say I teach high school also. And I also, like I said, have older children, and they pretty quickly see through it. If you say, what should we do? But you've already decided what we're going to do. But I think kind of directing and helping and getting input from them isn't wrong. Gives them some sense of ownership. One thing that is interesting is to really think about, okay, if I'm going to help this student to see this was wrong, I don't want to do this anymore, it helps me to know, well, what are some things that they do want, what are some things that they don't want? For instance, I have a girl who would be delighted if I would say, you have to stay in for break next time. Or I have quite a number of boys who would say, okay, you have to quit doing math and go out and run laps. You can see that's just simply not effective. So one of the things that older students want there at the bottom of the page, have you noticed that by the time they get to 6th, 7th grade, they want those seats back there. They really don't want to be right here many times. They want good grades. They appreciate good grades. Now, I'm not an advocate of saying, because you did this, I'm going to lower your grade here. That's not what I'm saying. But good grades are one thing that motivates them. Social life, or the approval of their peers, motivates them. So we know some of these things, and we're going to go back to some of those that we looked at the beginning of class, where you wrote whether this would be good discipline or not. But let me just again remind us, discipline addresses the heart. And the other thing that I remind us of, those two words, procedures and consistency. You know, we have a pastor friend who the boys and I go to help him sometimes. He lives close by. And he's got a boat. And One thing he likes to do at the end of the summer, and we look forward to doing it here in a few weeks, he takes us on his boat out to a little island. He's named it Miller Island. We're going to take you out to Miller Island. We are all by ourselves out there. And we enjoy it. And we never had a motorboat at home. But one of the things that's so interesting to me about motorboats is we'd go on Pastor Mike's motorboat and we'd be going along, and then he'd give it, accelerate, and all of a sudden we'd find that thing lifting up and we're just skimming across the top of the water. It's quite a feeling. And the other thing that I notice is after we're up and out, he can actually throttle back a little bit and we just skim along the top. But to get out takes quite a bit of power. Any idea where I'm going with that? If you can have procedures in place and be consistent and understand your authority and have a smile on your face, hopefully you can stay on this plane and don't get down here where you have to get out of it. Those are just some tools to remember. The other thing that I'd like to remember about discipline, it's actually a lot different than algebra. Algebra is tough. But if you follow all the steps correctly, it'll come out right. With discipline, it's not necessarily that way. You know, wouldn't it be neat if we could look back on Jesus' teaching and see everyone he talked to believed it and applied it. But it wasn't that way, because he purposely gave a choice. And so, don't necessarily think that because this student didn't respond right, I did something wrong. Because discipline isn't like algebra. I was at a teacher's meeting one time when I was just blessed by the honesty of one of the teachers there. He was talking about music class. And they had some students in music class who were not cooperating. And he went on to tell us about the plan that he and his co-teachers came up with to deal with this. And the teachers, we were sitting back there nodding our heads. Yeah, wow, hey, taking notes. But you know what he said? After he had described all this, he took a little bit of time doing it. He said, and you know what? I wish I could say it worked, because we were so sincere in our efforts. There's going to be times when you're very sincere in your efforts and it doesn't work. But continue bringing it to the Lord. Continue working with it in a humble and holy manner. Get advice, get help, and press on. Let's quickly look at some of these things on the first page. Notice we talked, no recess. I'm just curious. If we say that taking away their recess is good, that would be number one, and five, that would be number, well, I mean, five would be poor. How many of you rated that at about one or two? How many of you rated it about four or five? Okay? Yes. We're fairly balanced on that. Or unbalanced, I might. I don't know how to say it. Just from personal perspective, those students need recess. They just do. I have a sixth grader who happens to be my son. We're taking away his recess is effective. He's very competitive. After all, his team might lose if he's not there. He needs to be there. So if I want to get his attention, that's an option. I still like to give my students opportunity for recess. Here's one thing, though. You're playing recess, and there's an older student. You're getting into that age where they want to win. They want to be the best. Because I can handle the ball better than he can, or especially this little girl can, then if it comes over to here, let me just help you, little girl, and I'll take care of it. Help your students. Help your older students. See, that's not acceptable. That's still selfishness. And usually, sometimes we make a big deal out of discipline. Many, many times, it doesn't really need to be a big deal. That's a case where the ones who are often doing that in my class know what it means when Mr. Miller points to the fence. And then when I go like this, boom, they're back in the action again, but they're not taking the ball away from the little girl. And they need reminders. But for me to take them in and say, you realize your heart is selfish when you do this, we don't need to go over that every time. We just need to keep reminding. Arguing. I don't know if you play Foursquare at your school or not. Sounds like some of you do. The unfortunate thing about Foursquare is that it has lines. But that's also the fortunate thing. It gives learning opportunities. And I just, when there's arguing, I just say, go in and sit at your desk. And usually they play before and after school is when we usually play Foursquare at our school. And they realize, oh, Mr. Miller can tell us what to do and school hasn't even started. Yep. And is it really worth it? Well, it might take several times, but those are some times when you can take that playing privilege away. Remember, it's a privilege, not a right. Anything else on recess time? Yeah.
You said they need their recess. Is replacing their recess with a non-playing activity that's still outside of a good option? Or, like, I've made them pick up rocks where they don't get to play, but they're still getting fresh air and exercise.
That's a new idea to me. Seems like it ought to work.
I've already done where if they have to stay in and then the recess, I'll give them a chance, a few minutes to go run around the building or whatever. Mm-hmm. At least they get exercise. They always need to get exercise, I think. But, yeah, like you said, for some people, missing recess really speaks a lot and it goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And so, but it, they can still get a little fresh air.
That's a good point. You heard what she said. Make sure that if you do keep them in for recess, make sure that they do have some opportunity to run out and get fresh air. Mm-hmm. Okay, the next one, talking to them. Okay. What do you think of that idea? I think you're getting to the place where you're probably going to be doing more talking, more explaining. But one thing, I was visiting with a minister recently, and he said, you know, the thing that I remember about our talks with Dad is that Dad did all the talking. Don't get, and you know, as I said, talking to them. Don't get to the point where you're just talking to them. It's okay to explain things, but have some interaction. Remember, you're trying to bring them around to where they realize it's a heart thing. We're running out of time. I want to talk about some of these that might be, I'm going to call it behavior modification. Go down the, we will celebrate with pizza if we do this. The marbles in a jar down there. We put a marble in if you do good, take them out if you do bad. Those aren't necessarily bad things. You know, you work hard, and we all get hundreds on our spelling test, and then I'm going to give you pizza. That tends to motivate students. A little bit like good Mennonite capitalism. We work hard, we get more money. I don't know about you, but I'm not really a big fan of that. I mean, I'm a fan for working hard. But see, we're motivated by what we love, is what we heard this morning. And we get that, like he said about shopping, you know, by doing it more often, and you get to where, and just like shopping, some people don't need any training in wanting to get more stuff. But when we train them on, do this so you get this, you see what the logical conclusion to that would be. Not all bad, but be careful about that. Another one that we should just mention briefly is that merits and demerits. I went to the Christian Light training program before I started teaching school. And we used the merits and the demerits. You know, 3 demerits equals a detention. Some of you are familiar with that. It just wasn't working very well. And I promise I won't be offended, but would any of you like to guess why? I wasn't consistent. I can see it now. In fact, I could see it during that first year. That's why this isn't working for me. Be consistent. Raising your voice? 1, 2, or did you go 4 or 5? Okay, well, good. You know, people say, well, my teenager, he's rebellious. I think it's the bad music he's listening to. Or it's those other boys from church that he's hanging out with. Or it's this or it's that. Maybe. But he probably started before that. If he's rebellious, and when he was in this age, you were still, I told you. It's just not as effective. Speak quietly with this age, students. Make it count. God bless you with humility and wisdom. Thank you for coming today.